Alfred Knapp is the subject of Richard O. Jones's new book, The First Celebrity Serial Killer in Southwest Ohio, from Arcadia Publishing. Richard, tell us your background and what led you to Alfred Knapp's story.
Well, I was a writer for the Hamilton Journal News for 25 years, and in that time, I developed a keen interest in local history. And because of that, about 8 years ago, a fellow came to me and wanted me to do some research on one of Hamilton's more notorious, more recent cases, the case of James Urban Rupert, who murdered 11 members of his family on Easter Sunday, 1975. This fellow wanted to do a documentary film on Rupert, so he hired me to do some research and kind of come up with a timeline. But in doing so, I found out some other things about Hamilton's dark history that really got my attention, including two previous family massacres that people don't really know much about, and, of course, the case of Alfred Knapp, who was Butler County's actual first electric chair case in 1903. 1904 is when he was executed.
And he was born during the Civil War. Where was he born? And he was in Cincinnati for a while, too.
Yeah, his family moved around quite a bit. He was born around 1863 in Greencastle, Indiana. His family moved all over Ohio and Indiana and even into parts of Illinois and Kentucky. His father, for a time, was the conductor on the Mount Adams Incline. So when Alfred was in his early 20s, during one of his breaks from prison, he stayed with his family there for a while and gained some notoriety. He was doing extra work for the opera companies that were in town, but would occasionally kind of mix reality with his roles that he was playing and would wear his costumes out in the public and pretend he was a Roman legion or whatever it was he was playing at the time. So they called him Looney Knapp for a while. It came out in the trial. That was kind of his nickname when he was living in Cincinnati.
Well, you mentioned that his sister, Sadie Wenzel, said his mind was changed forever after he was hit in the head by a colt.
Yeah. When he was a very young child, he was kicked in the head by a colt when the family was living on a farm somewhere in Indiana, I think New Albany maybe. And as a result, he actually had sort of a U-shaped scar on his head. And when he went to trial, his attorneys had him cut his hair very close so that people could see that scar.
And his family seemed to think he was nuts and insane.
Well, they did. And according to the backstory that you would get in reading through the old newspaper accounts and so forth, they had spent a great deal of Alfred's life kind of protecting him and making sure he didn't get into too much trouble, although it didn't work very well because by the time he committed the murder for which he was convicted, he had already spent half of his adult life in prison or more than half of his adult life in prison. Six different terms, usually for assaulting women and young girls, but also some larceny and other things. So
he was always in trouble when he was around women.
He was always in trouble when he was around women. And he was particularly attracted, it seems, to very petite, very delicate women. And some of his assault cases were very young girls. So I kind of come to the conclusion that maybe Alfred didn't totally grow up. In his mind, he was still a little boy and was attracted to young-looking women.
Let's talk about the women he killed by sharing his confession given on February 26, 1903. Start by setting the stage for that confession.
Well, what had happened was he had met his third wife, Hannah, through one of his sisters. And they were against the marriage, and so they were kind of estranged from them a little bit, although they would kind of come back and visit. And his sister, Mamie, stayed close with Hannah. And so when Hannah came up missing, they got very suspicious. And Mamie's husband eventually, when they got word that Alfred had remarried, when there was no body or no divorce decree, Hannah was just simply gone. They found out that Alfred had married again a woman in Indianapolis. And so the brother-in-law, Ed King, Mamie's husband, came to Hamilton to investigate, started asking questions, and the police got hold of what he was doing. And so they kind of took charge of the case. A detective from the Hamilton Police Department left Hamilton at 10 o'clock at night on the 24th of February, 1903. They went and rousted Alfred out of his bed in Indianapolis and had him back in town by 10:40 next morning. It was when the train had arrived. Now, you talk about your 24-hour news cycles today, but by that time, the Hamilton Sun had already issued a special edition that had big headline, Knapp, wife murderer arrested, even though he hadn't been charged with anything yet. But as a result of those headlines, there were already people waiting at the train station to greet the infamous wife strangler. So they took him to the Hamilton jail, and they started looking for the body, and they didn't know quite what to do with him. But But the mayor of Hamilton, a fellow by the name of Charles Bosch, had known Alfred from when he was living in Hamilton. In fact, they had lived next door for a while. And so he was kind of curious because he thought he was kind of an odd fellow, but didn't think he was dangerous. You know, he thought he was kind of a sweet fellow because of the way he interacted with Hannah. And so he called him into his office with the chief of police and some other officials, and they gave him the sweat, they called it. They started sweating him. And they talked to him for 3 or 4 hours, and he would act like, yeah, he had something to say, but he didn't really want to tell him. You know, he's being very coy. But eventually the mayor thought, well, I know him, so let me have a kind of a one-on-one with him. So he dismissed all the police people, and Alfred finally confessed to him that he had killed Hannah and told him about how he put her body in the box and put the box in the Great Miami River. But he still kept acting like he had more to tell. Well, since Hannah was his third wife, the mayor thought, well, maybe it had something to do with one of his earlier wives. So the next day, he called him in again, and they gave him the sweat, and just like the day before, after a while, they started growing a little weary of it, and so the mayor dismissed all the police people and sat Alfred down and said, do you want to write down what you want to tell me? And he says, yeah, let me do that. So he wrote out a confession that he had killed 4 other women, including one of his wives, his second wife, Jenny Knapp, in Cincinnati, but also the case of a young woman who lived near the YMCA in downtown Cincinnati, and a young girl in Indianapolis. And he confessed all of those murders. And so that made great headlines, not only in Hamilton, but also in Cincinnati and Indianapolis and around the country. Newspapers from Chicago even sent reporters down to Hamilton to get an interview with the Strangler Knapp.
Well, I was wondering if you could read his confession.
Sure. This is the kind of the brief confession that he wrote out. It says, on June 21st, 1894, I killed Emma Littleman in a lumber yard on Guest Street in Cincinnati. And on August 1st, 1891, I killed Mary Eckert on Walnut Street opposite the YMCA buildings in Cincinnati. And on August 7th, 1894, I killed my wife, Jenny Knapp, under the canal bridge of Liberty Street and threw her in the canal in Cincinnati. And in July 1895, I killed Ida Gebhardt in Indianapolis. And on December 22nd, I killed my wife, Hannah Knapp, at 339 South 4th Street in Hamilton. And I threw her body into the river out by Lindenwald. This is the truth. Alfred Knapp, I made this confession of my own free will and not by the request of any officer or anyone else. Alfred Knapp. And then there's actually in the book, you can see a reprint of that confession in his own handwriting that the Cincinnati Inquirer had reproduced. And it's also witnessed by the chief of police and the captain of police that went to Indianapolis to get him, as well as the mayor and a few other people. So it was a very big deal. In fact, there's a really interesting picture that they didn't put in the book because they thought it was kind of dark, but it's on my website, True Crime Historian, of all these officials of Hamilton standing around the Strangler Knapp with their arms on his shoulder and things of that sort, where they were kind of chummy with him, really. Because by what I can gather, he was a charming, kind of naive fellow. He was kind of sweet and very engaging and loved to tell stories. The question is, how true are the stories that he was telling?
There's that. And the body of Hannah, his third wife, was found 10 weeks later in the Ohio River.
10 weeks later, it was only a week after his confession or so, but yeah, it was after all this started happening. It was down in New Albany, Indiana, so it had traveled several hundred miles to get there and was in pretty bad condition when it was discovered by a ferry boat crew. But it was definitely identified as Hannah, and they brought it back.
By this time, he hadn't been indicted, had he, when they found the body? Or
no,
they did
not indict him until they had a body. The prosecutor at the time was a fellow by the name of Warren Gard, whose brother actually was one of the newspaper editors in Hamilton, Homer Gard. But Warren Gard was kind of the boy wonder of the Hamilton bar, I think I call him in there, because he was only 24 years old when he was elected prosecutor. And so he's a very sharp, very astute man. And he was of the opinion, he didn't believe what Alfred was saying. And he said, until we have a body, we don't have a murder case. A side note on Mr. Gard is that he went on to become a U.S. congressman and a judge.
And the defense lawyer was a former Hamilton County assistant prosecutor, which I found interesting.
Yeah, Thomas Darby. And he also became a judge later on after this case. And poor Darby, he literally worked himself sick working on this case to the point where he was collapsing in the courtroom during his closing arguments and so forth. So,
well, this was way before air conditioning.
Yeah, and it was during the summertime. His trial was in June. And if you're in Hamilton in June, you know that it's hot and muggy and without air conditioning. Yeah, it was pretty bad in there.
So the case went to the Butler County jury on Wednesday, July 15th, 1903. They found him guilty with no mercy, which meant he was going to Ohio State Penitentiary to Old Sparky.
Old Sparky, yes.
The electric chair. So he went up there, but he came back.
For a time, because of some of the instructions that the judge had given to the jury, a higher court, an appeals court, gave him a new trial. And so they brought him back into Hamilton. But before they could try him again, the Ohio Supreme Court reversed that appeals court decision. So they sent him right back to the annex in Columbus to meet his fate.
Yeah, and that was on August 19th.
Mm-hmm, 1904.
1904. And his last meal, I thought, was interesting. Spring chicken salad, watermelon, blackberries, sweet potatoes, and a glass of milk from the warden's wife.
Yeah, the warden's wife cooked the dinners for him.
The warden's wife.
Yeah. And that was really kind of common back in those days. I mean, when he was staying in the Butler County Jail, it was usually the sheriff's wife who would take care of the prisoners.
And he's buried up in Columbus?
He is buried in Columbus, yes.
And where do you go from here with this book?
With this book?
Yeah. I mean, after this book, do you have another book on the horizon? Because this one is so interesting.
I have a couple different books on the horizon. I do have a draft of a book on Mr. Rupert that I'm waiting to find the right publisher for. I've also been working on a book about the 1884 riots here in Cincinnati, the courthouse riots, because they were sparked by some murder verdicts that the public didn't like, and they got very indignant about it, and that's what started those riots. And then I also have a third book that I'm kind of starting to think about and kick around, and that's about the Prohibition era here in Southwest Ohio and some of the gang wars that took place as a result of that.
Well, obviously you love research.
Oh, I love it. I can waste hours and hours and hours in newspaper microfilm, or now some of it's online, and that's even worse because then I stay up all night.
Well, thanks for writing this book. It's really interesting.
Well, thanks for having me, Lee.
We've been talking with Richard O. Jones about his book, The First Celebrity Serial Killer in Southwest Ohio. You'll find a link at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Lee Hay.